Good morning. I thought of several different subjects this morning. There's really just one, although the approach can be varied. I had a discussion this morning with my wife, Charlene, about whether life is random. I guess that brings me to the idea of responsibility. So understanding responsibility is beyond idea. It's not about what we think. So in an ordinary sort of view of life, from an ordinary human being's perspective, being responsible relates to our particular tribe and our upbringing and what we think is right and wrong and moral and upstanding, and we go to church or we go to synagogue or we go to a Buddhist temple and we do what we're taught is correct action and behavior for our leading a happy and successful life and doing no harm. And all of that's well and good, but that's not true understanding. That's not true wisdom or true responsibility. So I often say you can't know what you are from what you're not. So some outside teaching, learning, experience is not direct experience. It's adopting what's being taught as a way of living. But there's always this question, who am I? What is this? Is this real? Buddha's approach was very different from other teachings. One of the more difficult things to understand, because you're looking at it from what you're not, is no self. All this comes from this idea of self. This identification, the other, the me, how do I relate to the other? So to understand no self, to really understand responsibility. So we talk often about causes and conditions. So if this happens, that happens. This separation, this duality that we, even on a very subtle level, even if we're very intelligent, and educated and understand that life is much more than that. It's not so simplistic. Nonetheless, we have this basic belief in self based on our experience and our teaching and our growing up, all of which is not beginner's mind. It's not being in the moment. It's relying on history and past. So ultimately, that's not being responsible. One way of looking at the world is business as usual, meaning I'm separate, I'm here, the world is out there, I'm not responsible for what happens out there. I'm just responsible for my particular little enclave or my view, how I proceed in thinking and acting and being. All of this that I'm discussing is, that's all what in Buddhism is called delusion. We're deluding ourselves. So in meditation, when we're sitting, and in Zen generally, Zen is always approached from non-duality. What a Zen teaching is not about right and wrong from a dualistic point of view. It's not, you know, do this, don't do that. And one of the things that's so difficult to understand about Buddhist teachings and Zen in particular is saying that it's not this and it's not that. And it's not that. So what is it? So beginner's mind, we talk about it as, you know, always coming back to the moment. Back to being present. You can't know what an apple is unless you taste it. Taste the tea. Responsibility, being a bodhisattva, is being awake. Otherwise, you're still just contributing to the suffering. So it's so important for us to wake up, to see what it is that we are in this world and how we're here. And the idea of no self means that we are not this body, yet we're not this body. Consciousness. There's a materialist that I just read about this morning who's busily trying to find the source of consciousness within physical reality, within the brain. And this is the unsolvable problem. This is the problem that they admit can never be solved. Or can it? Where is mind? Is it holding up the flower? Is it biting the apple? Is it drinking the tea? One of the things that's coming up a lot for me right now, and I'm sure for all of us, frequently and maybe all the time, is our history colors our experience. When something really traumatic or important has happened in our lives that we've struggled with understanding and grasped some sort of way of putting it into a perspective that we can grapple with, yet we never really can because we're struggling with trying to put it into terms that can be understood from what you're not. The past is gone. We have to let it go so that we can really be present in the moment. Yet, the past is a rich tapestry of who we are. So, again, this famous analogy in Buddhism of the lotus flower coming out of the mud. You can't have one without the other. So all this experience, you can't negate it. It's there. It's important. Yet, become attached to it. Try to put it into a particular perspective, belief system that you've adopted in order to avoid or embrace something that is unembraceable. You can't really attach to, yet you try so hard. You know, this we talk about the idea of self as being the firm knot. It's the firm knot that needs to be untied. Yet, it's a beautiful thing. Each of us is unique and special, and this tapestry is wonderful, but not from the point of view of clinging. An attachment. It all comes down to that. If you can enjoy life, truly enjoy life, you're not attached to it. You're not clinging to it. This ever-changing tapestry, you can't hold on to it. Because there's no I that holds on to anything. That's just an idea. Because, you know, the senses, with our identification, we sense something, we smell something, we taste something, we interpret it, our consciousness tells us what it is. You know, you think of those tests where they blindfold you and hold your nose and tell you, taste this, what is this? You can't tell if it's an apple or a pear or a banana. I mean, other than, you know, maybe the texture gives you a hint. There's a meditation technique where you cover all the senses, called Kriya Yoga. So our practice, you know, is a wonderful journey. It is kind of magical, yet it's not ungrounded and what's real. It's magical in that it takes us out of our ordinary way of viewing things, which is limited. You know, I, like everyone else, I want to be an effective, productive human being. I want to share, but I have to wake up in order to really be effective. If the three poisons enter in, talk about how angry we are at people that have been vaccinated, yet they're suffering so much right now. And we're angry with them, you know, for not being smart enough to have made the right choice. If we really look at ourselves, how often have we not made the right choice? As we suffer through it, is it the mud that the lotus flower can grow out of? So how can you be compassionate towards these people who are suffering out of their own, quote, stupidity? Take judgment out of it. Feel it. There's enough suffering to go around. I guess I talked a lot today. Wasn't expecting to, but I think I'll stop there. Let's open it up for discussion and conversation.
And thank you so much for your talk. I enjoyed it. And I thought it was succinct and pointed. And the idea of responsibility has always been kind of a measuring stick for me. You know, I'm in recovery, and I think the biggest impediment before I came into recovery was my fear and resistance to responsibility. That right here, right now, I can be all in. I can pay attention. I can try to be a part of the group. And to whatever extent I can share my own experience, strength, and hope, I can hopefully be helpful to another member of the Sangha.
Yeah. Anybody else?
So yes, just this idea of responsibility seems to be so current. And I was reading yesterday that there actually was a plan in the US to have not just a Statue of Liberty and freedom, our own individual freedoms and such, but also this idea of responsibility as the counterpart. And it was going to be a statue that was going to be on the west coast of the country. And there actually are still plans, and a committee is still working to try and make that happen. But I guess the idea was is that with the idea of liberty, we should also understand what our responsibilities are. And of course, this is front and center, a big thing right now with the whole COVID and how we respond and how we do what we spoke, what we should do because of being a member of a community, not just because of our own individual preferences. So it seems to be quite an idea. But I guess the other thing that came out of it was, you know, I'd love to spring a quote on you also. I like those here, but it was Voltaire on, in the same vein says, of the past and our responsibility and such. To the living, we owe respect. To the dead, we owe nothing but the truth, which I thought was really true. And we should look back at the what's gone and just only accept what the truth of it is rather than letting it be a burden to us in terms of having to, oh, it's something special. Get on with the incident and not worry about the past in that regard. So some couple of things there that came out of what Willa was saying that seemed quite pertinent.
I love that. Thank you. Sure. That's excellent. You know, the image of the loving mother holds the child and says, it's going to be okay. It's okay. Don't worry, everything's okay. Now, my mother may well have said that to me, but I don't have that recollection. So, and I think lots of us don't. I think there's a universal experience that we feel kind of alone and I don't know if unworthy is the right word, but just incomplete somehow, you know, not quite all there. And then we discover that actually we are all there. But still that doubt creeps in, right? It's like at 3 o'clock in the morning, you know, thought rises out of the subconscious and you think, what the fuck is going on? So we have to take it all in and let it all go. You know, it's like waves. And when we sit, we get into the deeper recesses of consciousness and mind. And then we come back up to the surface and we go on into our lives. I think the part from meditating that I find the most interesting is not when I'm sitting, but what happens afterwards. How I feel, how I think, how I act with other people in my life, how sharp I am, how, you know, clear I am, those kinds of things out in the world. That's what really keeps me meditating, because that's the part that shows me that it's working.
I have a painting by a friend of mine of a female Buddha face, and the caption on it says, "It's okay." And for me, that "it's okay" comes from Buddha nature.
Yeah.
And mother, father, whatever, but that to me is the essence of what this is all about, is it's okay. It's okay.
Wonderful. I love that too. Yeah, especially now.
And you reminded me the fact that, you know, as a child, obviously, I wasn't aware of the fact that I have everything I could possibly need. Call it my Buddha nature, my higher power, whatever, to deal with whatever life presents and whatever challenges I have on a daily basis. And what I don't have or what I need help with, I can get if I ask for help.
Yeah, the three treasures, right? Buddha, the teaching, the Sangha, the community.
We love to say, but what your talk is stirring up for me is that the other day YouTube randomly put this TED talk up under suggestions and I clicked on it just without thinking. And it was a woman whose husband had committed suicide. And she was married to him for 15 years, she thought happily, and had no idea that he was severely depressed. They had two wonderful school-aged children. He had a thriving career where he was helping people and his clients loved him. And everybody remembered him with a smile on his face. But yet after he died, his wife found these journals and he described what he called a bully in his mind, that he could not shut off this bully no matter how hard he tried. But he never told anyone. There's no record that he ever spoke to any other human being about the suffering that he was going through. And, you know, for his wife and those who loved him, it was a shock out of nowhere. And so his wife has started to speak out and encourage people to reach out if they're feeling like they can't cope.
Yeah.
And I don't know, somehow the story just really touched me so deeply of, you know, the levels of illusion that we live in.
Yes.
There are so many levels of illusion, and when this woman talked about how she had no idea, 15 years, she thought she knew everything about her husband. This was humongous. And how could she not know? And she had to get to a place of not blaming herself for figuring it out and preventing it from stopping.
Yeah.
So it's just very powerful. And so your talk just reminded me of the power of that video this week. I haven't been able to stop thinking about it since I saw it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I've had a number of TED Talks affect me that way. Yeah. They can be, because the sharing there is so real.
Yes.
And that's the whole thing, right? I mean, it's, yeah. Well, thank you. Yeah. Yeah, that's gave me goosebumps hearing you describe it. Yeah. And just in our own personal lives, we can relate to how many times we've had the blinders on to what is happening because it was convenient for whatever reason. Yeah. Not to blame.
Right.
It's not about blame.
One thing I notice is that as we go through the pandemic, COVID, and all of this, there seems to be such a resistance to really sharing what's actually what we're feeling.
Yeah.
When I'm, you know, speaking to people, I mean, it's like, let's not go near that, you know, and there's a total avoidance of it. You know, not that it has to be made into something dramatic, but why do we run so far from these feelings, like you said? And it's so much more difficult that way. And to be able to open and ask for what you need or ask for what somebody else needs during all of this and actually listen.
Yes.
A big deal.
And the tendency to just always categorize and ascribe a position or a blame to, as you said, when it was like, oh, those vaccine deniers, that's it. Oh, as I go, the refusers.
Yeah.
Yes, like, I'm angry at them because they won't do it. It's like there's all sorts of reasons there, all sorts of feelings, emotions, mm-hmm. history that can put somebody into a counterpart to where you might think.
Yeah.
But we're not really having that discussion, it seems.
Yep. Yeah. Well, this has been a good discussion today. Thank you all so much for your contribution and being here with me today. Appreciate it so much. Hope to see you next Sunday.